back to prioritizing.
I'm gonna keep all this. Hey, gang, and welcome to another edition of Prioritizing, a married couple's faith-based insight into what is most important in education and marriage and in life. We are that married couple, Samantha and Michael. I, of course, am Michael.
And I'm Samantha.
Yes, we remember that. Last time we touched base, it's been a while, but we talked about homework and how homework needs to be a reflection of the lesson that you taught the day of. Otherwise, it's just busy work and Samantha's being obnoxious. So what do you think about homework? Can you stop? I'm going to leave all this, just so you know. I'm leaving it all.
Okay.
So what do you have to say about our previous episode, Samantha?
Well, I think homework can be a very useful tool in helping teach time management, but often it can be overused and become a burden.
Yes. Okay. Today, though, we're going to be touching on... What are we touching on today, Samantha?
Parent-teacher conferences.
And I understand we might be a little late for all the teachers out there. We might be a little late coming to the table with parent-teacher conferences, but some of you probably still haven't had yours. Can you please stop doing that? I'm asking you nicely. So,
okay.
We had our conferences about a month ago. Is that fair to say, a month ago, Samantha?
Yeah, Veterans Day weekend, so yes. Just under a month.
And Samantha, how did yours go, would you say?
I think they went very well. I think parent-teacher conferences are always a time that can be a little nerve-wracking, but as long as you practice good communication with the parents beforehand so that there's no surprises, they tend to go smoothly.
Yeah, you touched on that. Now, Samantha, you have parents coming in, you have 25, 30 kids in your class, and I'm guessing you have about 20 minutes to go. Is that fair? 20 minutes? Is that
we have 15 at 15 my new minutes. School.
Okay, even quicker. So how are you spending that 15 minutes? Because that's a quick period of time. And imagine you have a student, a student right before, a parent right before, and a conference right after, and you have a student who's just someone you really have to stress the social aspect, maybe a kid who has behavior issues, but the parents are always going to want to know about the academics first and foremost. That's just my experience anyway. So how do you manage that 15 minutes?
Well, for me, what works best is going in prepared. So for my conferences, I always tend to have a note-taking sheet of the key talking points I want to cover, and I fill that out beforehand. It's a combination of a checklist of skills, of strengths and weaknesses, as well as narrative comments that I write beforehand. And I also supply different handouts that I can use as talking points or references, especially if the conference runs short, meaning I don't have enough time to go through everything I want to. I can reference that and say, in this pamphlet, it will reinforce my main talking points. But I think going in with a agenda, and one thing that this year was new for me is that our parent-teacher conferences were set up where the parents don't sign in. It's given a time and a date, and it aligns with other grade levels. So it was really important to stay on task because
I'm not sure what you mean there.
So in previous years, we would set a schedule and the parents could then sign up for the time of the conference that they wanted.
Right.
The way that it's done at my new school is all the teachers get together in one big meeting and they'll start and say, who has, Michael Pryor? And they'll go through all the siblings in the Pryor family and set up the same time frame so that the parents come in during one time.
Oh, so it's convenient for the parents.
Exactly. So your conferences are back to back with siblings of that same family. So it really spirals. And if one goes over, or if a parent doesn't show or the timing gets off, it impacts all the other teachers in the school.
That's a smart idea. And it's worth mentioning that, just for the record, for all the listeners out there, my parents never went to parent-teacher conferences. I'm the youngest of nine, so they didn't bother going. They did have an occasional comment to write on my report card, if you remember that, Samantha.
This is my favorite. I was just going to ask you to elaborate on the story because it's one of my favorite of your mother.
See, on the old report cards, you get a hard copy sent home in the little envelope on the day report cards went out. And it'd go home to the parents, and on the back, their teacher could write comments. And at the end of the second quarter,
My teacher, my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Hitchcock, wrote, Michael will be doing a lot better in fourth grade if he stopped making faces at everybody.
Not much has changed.
So, and then there's a spot where the parent can reply to the previous comment. And my mother wrote, and I have it in here somewhere, but I won't grab it out. She wrote something to the like of, Michael is working so hard and we are so proud of him.
I can just imagine, like, knowing your mother and just, it's a wonderful, wonderful response and comment and fits her perfectly. But from the teacher's perspective, I would have been like, oh my gosh.
If I was the teacher there, I would just, and you know, what's funny is you look at the third quarter comments, the teacher did not write anything on the report card for the rest of the year. And probably because she realizes when she writes a comment home that the mom just supports the kid and doesn't really care. And I laugh now, but these are the parents that concern me in today's world. But this is just more, I don't know, for my mother and I, it was a
humorous story.
Yeah, and it's indicative of our relationship. She'd support me regardless. I mean, unless I did something really stupid, but funny faces, that wasn't a big deal to her. That probably made her laugh. But when we're talking about parent-teacher conferences, Samantha, if I could share, when I would give my conferences, I would always, it was right after the report card came out. So I would be inclined to have the report card ready. So I'd have that out, and I would start off by asking if there were any questions about the report card. Like, a lot of times parents have questions about a grade, or they don't agree with something, or they're just not sure how I came to a certain grade, so they might have a question about it. So I would lay that out first and foremost, so I could let them ask the questions they need, make sure they're satisfied, but then from there, I would essentially do most of the talking.
I agree, and I do a similar setup with my conferences as well. I think allowing the parents to start with their concerns or their experiences. You know, I always begin by saying, and how is the year going so far for you? Because while it is important for their child and how their child's year is going, it also impacts their whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And by being a teacher, we want to be in collaboration with the parents too, to make sure that everyone's happy and everyone's working together and that we're all on the same page.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, I know we've probably said this before, but the parents are the primary educators, and it needs to be 100% a partnership. And sometimes you're going to run into parents, though, Samantha, who aren't necessarily receptive of the positive communication or even the communication in general. So how do you deal with those parents? I mean, because those parents, even though they might not be communicative, they are still going to come in for a conference most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just allowing them to feel heard, even if you don't agree with what they're saying, mm-hmm. or if it offends you and you're really upset and heated about it, but not to dismiss the feelings that are very much true to those parents. To recognize that you're hearing them and you will follow up on a later date, or you appreciate them voicing their concerns,
yeah.
Or questions. You know, you're not going to have an equal partnership every time, but as long as the foundation is respect, even if you're from the teacher not being respected, to go above and beyond to show respect to that parent and to that family as well.
Yeah, one of the biggest mistakes I've seen in previous years is teachers would go on the defensive when parents would have harsh questions, or they would challenge maybe a grade on the report card. And I think that's just the beginning of the end for that partnership, at least as far as that conference is concerned. Because once the parent sees the teacher on the defensive, they can almost automatically assume that there must be something wrong here. Because why, if that weren't the case, why would the teacher be so, you know, hostile?
Right, I agree. And I think, too, that by reacting in a defensive approach in all areas, whether it be personally or professionally, always starts to close down walls, and that to avoid it or take a moment and a breath and to
what
try to...
What does it do to the walls?
Build walls. Sorry. Sorry, that didn't make much sense. But you know what I'm trying to say. It builds a barrier. And now I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Communication
anyway,
with parents.
Communication is important.
And walls. And...
Right, and walls. And if you are feeling frustrated, it's okay to, you know, communicate still in a kind way and to put kindness first,
now,
no matter what.
Samantha, let me ask you. You've taught for nearly 7 or 8 years now. How do you I can only imagine that there's been an instance when a parent has asked you a question or challenged you on something where you kind of saw where the parent was coming from and you almost sympathized with what they were saying and maybe might have questioned your own behavior in a certain situation. Is that fair to say that that has happened?
Yeah. Okay. You know, I think in any situation, we're all humans, we're not perfect, but the way that you can react and from my perspective and my experiences is by admitting not the mistake necessarily, if it was a mistake, but a new way of thinking and acknowledging, oh, you know what, I appreciate you saying that. I didn't think of it that way before. Yeah, or now that you mention it, it brings it to a new light. Perhaps I could have done this, or in the future I could try this. And just meeting the parents halfway and meeting the families halfway and not going in with the mentality that I know best, I am right no matter what.
Right. And I think parents in a lot of cases need to defer to the professional, but there are some instances when, I mean, because realistically the parent does know the kid better than anybody. And that's something we as the professionals need to defer to the parents. As much as it pains us, as much as it pains us to defer to the parent who allows their kid to miss the day of school the day the project is due. Have you ever had that happen, Samantha?
Yes, I have.
Yes, that's a frustrating one. And even though that happens, we still have to, you know, give the kid the benefit of the doubt. And a lot of times, I think, maybe you can think of an instance, but as human beings, when there's a problem with the parent, what do we almost automatically do, Samantha, do you think?
I think generally it's very easy to take that frustration out on the kid.
Yeah, why is that?
Because they're there. Not that this is right, not that this is what I know I'm doing.
I'm laughing, but it's
but
not
I
right.
think it's a very common mistake that's made in our field, is that we direct our frustration maybe in the wrong way and in the wrong approach. So regardless, you know, I know that things get more intense as you get older in grade levels academically, and the work is more demanding and it's harder to make up when you've missed. But I also think, regardless, at the elementary level, there's still kids, you know, they're still less than 10 years old, or 10 and 11 at the oldest, and they still deserve to be able to take that day off and go have fun. Mm-hmm. Or now, not every day or every single time there's a holiday they're missing school, but keep it into perspective while you're communicating with the parents. You know, I had in the past a couple students that have taken amazing trips to different countries, and at that point the family comes first in building those experiences and those relationships. And it's also an incredible learning experience for them too, to understand the culture and the traditions of somewhere else. And at that point, I do think as teachers, we can kind of step back and think, what's most important for the best interest of the kid?
I agree. And not to mention, there's a lesson to be learned for the kid, for the kid when they come back. They have work they have to make up. A lot of parents will say, do you have any work you want them to do on the trip? And my first instinct, and it's not out of I don't want them to have extra work when they come back necessarily, but it's more so because I want them to enjoy the trip and have that experience. The last thing I want a kid doing when they're on a cruise or something is homework or back work or anything that they're missing. I think that's the worst possible idea. So I don't give work ahead of time. But when they come back, then they learn that they missed X amount of days. They have to make up for it. And that's just what they have to do.
I agree. And I think knowing your families and knowing your students too. Yes. I definitely have had some students where I'm like, oh my gosh, no, please go. Relax, it's not the end of the quarter. We have some time and I'll combine everything and obviously let some assignments slide that I can. But I also have had an instance where a student is away for an extended period of time and is just a go-getter, and it's going to cause that kid more stress to know how much work they're going to have to make up when they come back. So even just one thing I've done, I'm actually doing it right now, is sending a weekly email with some of the work. That way it's not, from a teacher's perspective, we might think, oh, I don't have my plans together a month in advance to have all that work, or it might change. But just by doing it weekly and say, hey, you know what? here's what we're working on. If she gets it done, great. If she, you know, if he doesn't, not a big deal, and we'll catch up when we need to.
You mean for the people who are on the extended vacations?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So if they're weak in math, say, or you're doing a lot of multiplication tables, you might just say, you know what, on the cruise they could work on their multiplication facts before bed or something like that.
Exactly. And I think too, you know, you have every now and then you do have those students that enjoy it and they want to learn and they are looking forward to doing those types of things. So it's not necessarily a chore while they're gone, but something that keeps that stability for them.
Because that's the key. I mean, you want kids to love learning, and one of the worst ways to stifle that would be by giving them a bunch of books to take on the trip with them, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Or causing them more anxiety about this, just any missing school or having to do work.
And mentioning that, you know, it's good for the teacher to wait until the kid gets back to let them know what they missed. But, you know, day before the kid goes, if you're saying, have a good trip, you know, make sure you're going to miss a lot of work when you're gone. You got to make it up when you get back. Don't even bother putting that thought in the kid's head before they go. And we're getting off on a tangent because this is about parent-teacher conferences. That's okay. So, Samantha, last question, and then my food's getting cold here. But and sorry about Samantha's. What do you got, bronchitis?
Yes, I have bronchitis.
Yes, bronchitis. Not contagious.
Nope.
Just so everyone knows, so you're good. Let's say you have a parent and you want to focus on the child's, and I've had this happen several times. Your main concern is not the kid's academics. You think they're either right where they need to be at grade level or they're above grade level. Or maybe, you know what, just the behavior is a much greater concern. That's how you want to spend the 15 minutes. The parent wants to focus on academics because they might be maybe oblivious to the behavior, or they condone the behavior, or they just don't see it the same way you do. How do you handle that conference, Samantha?
Well, I think it shouldn't just be one conference. That if this is an issue and the behavior is that big of a problem or a concern, it shouldn't wait until the 10th week of school.
Can I tell everybody that I set up that question? I was hoping to trap Samantha, but she answered it. I shouldn't say it's the right way, but that was the way I was hoping. Like, that was what I was going to give as the answer, but that's the way she answered it. So go ahead, Samantha.
So I would go in, especially knowing that you have documentation of your reasoning, something to speak to, examples specifically to cite, and keeping it specific rather than subjective. And also knowing that that conference can continue. You know, you can end it by saying, I'm so sorry, you know, our time is up. When is the time when I can call you? Or can we sit down right now and reschedule another time for you to come in?
You show an interest. And then there, at least it leaves on a good note. Even if the conference is heated and there's back and forth, you could just say, I'm really sorry. Can we reschedule, like you said? And then they at least feel like they're not just getting kicked out, that the teacher's still willing to hear what they have to say. And that goes back to what you said in the first place. It was parents just want to be heard.
And respected, and having that give and take.
Give and take.
With the teacher and the school.
With the teacher and the school, folks. I'm just repeating because we're going to wrap up here. Well, that's all we got for you today. It's a quick one. But thank you all for tuning in, as always. You can check us out on... This is marriage, folks. We're not talking about marriage today, but we'll Samantha and I will talk about marriage when this podcast is over. But have a good night, everybody. You can check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Podomatic. And if you know any teacher friends who might just need, you know, a little pointer or two, then maybe point them in our direction. Thanks so much. God bless you.